We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's talk about the running back class after the NFL Combine. What does it mean, I guess, for the NFL draft and also for fantasy football moving forward? We're going to look at the running backs who tested. I'm going to leave the running backs who didn't test to a different portion of time when we get pro days and so on to go forward with. But Sean, the draft guide pre-combine edition is available. Obviously, you can get that right now, but you can also get the post-combine edition that will be coming in the next week or two, and then we will have the post-draft edition as well. All three editions available for $20. The link is in today's show notes if you want to head over and purchase that at rotoviz.com. Sean, running backs, I'm going to start off with a question to see how we're feeling about this. How excited are you post-combine versus pre-combine for this class? What is, I guess, in the grand scheme has changed, or maybe not changed for you in the last week?
I think the sleepers are there. And that's the part that's fun. Because if you can get somebody who...
I can feel the listeners, Sean, are hyped. That was all they wanted. Once they hear Sean Siegel and sleepers, that's they're intrigued. They're in.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what can eventually happen with this class where there's not a Bijan Robinson, there's not a Jahmyr Gibbs, and... it would be shocking if you had a running back go in the first round after we had last year's situation where you have the two guys go very, very early. Now, running backs who don't go in the first round are often also fantastic. I mean, it was somewhat absurd for a Jonathan Taylor, for a Breece Hall, not to go in the first round. Running backs can go all over the place in terms of what the reality draft slot ends up being. And yet, despite the fact that we don't have these super high-end guys, I think it will end up being a class that's fun. And one of the things that you're trying to do when you build dynasty teams is to build through these positions that really last and allow you to, you know, dominate those wide receiver positions, certainly dominate the flex spots. We think about the RB triflex leagues over at the FFPC that have blown up in just such a massive way and become a huge part of what the dynasty community is looking at in general, certainly a big part of the FFPC's product. And so you have the triflex, you have those additional flexes, you can play a wide receiver in the super flex because of the way the QB scoring works, where, I mean, certainly if you have two top QBs, which would be the ideal build, you're going to play it that way, but you want to build through these star receivers. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to build through them in the draft, right? Maybe you want to build through them in the startup and you're looking at some other positions in the draft. But regardless of how you do it, you want to get running back scoring. There aren't a ton of formats. Now, there are some out there. I play with some fun formats with Ryan McDowell, for example, where you only have to get to the one running back in your lineup at all. But in most formats, you have to play at least two. You'd love to be in a situation where you actually end up with an abundance of riches column. You and I played three running backs a decent amount on our team, and that was a successful way to do it. But you want to get to that running back production with limited cost to yourself. And I think in the second and third rounds of this year's rookie drafts, you're going to have a lot of guys who end up hitting, and maybe not hitting in a way where they're giving you RB1 seasons in the future, but they're going to give you individual games at individual times that really work. And as a season develops, as you know, a 2-3-4 year span develops, there are going to be stretches where you can count on a guy that you got almost for free to put up the type of scoring that allows you to have a championship season. And so from that perspective, I thought the combine was a lot of fun. You always want to see a class that maybe has 4 or 5 guys who could go in the first 8 or 9 picks. You're never going to get that in a season like this where you have some top QBs and you have some top wide receivers. If there's going to be a class that's a little bit down, to have it come at a time where, because the other positions are fairly loaded, you weren't going to have to pay that much anyway to fill your running back spot, I think it works pretty perfectly for people who do need to maybe add another running back or two to their roster.
So that's a positive to start the show out on. I guess we'll talk about maybe some of the sleeper options a little bit later. But at the top end, talent-wise, prospect-wise, who are some of the names that maybe solidified that spot for you, or that are moving up in your opinion post-combine here? Any running backs that have really, you know, put themselves into that top tier for you?
Well, the guy that I didn't know really what to make of is Trey Benson. And in part because the rest of the class at the top end is weak, and because Jonathan Brooks has the ACL that he is recovering from, there was a great chance that Benson was going to be the top back. He's drafted obviously early in best ball. He projects to be one of, if not the first back taken in the reality draft. But his overall resume is somewhat weak in that he starts at Oregon, doesn't really have production there, moves to Florida State, has a 2022 season where, in a kind of limited workload, right? I mean, this isn't a player who is carrying, you know, 250 times and putting up 2,000 yards from scrimmage. And you do want to keep that in mind, because that's a different type of dynamic if you have to do that versus if you are a rotational back. But on his 154 carries, he averages 4.5 yards after contact per attempt. Those are big numbers. He has a 31% evasion rate. That's a huge number. That type of performance in a guy who's a good athlete really jumps out to you. Now, the thing that's kind of weird is that those numbers fall off again in terms of the peripherals in his final year. You don't like to see that. But when you look at the big number here, the 4.39 40, and when you're talking about a guy at 216 pounds running a sub 4.4, then the athletic comps that you start to bring into play are guys like a Breece Hall, a DeMarco Murray, an Adrian Peterson, a Ryan Matthews. That'll get you excited. I don't think that he's going to be those guys.
Pretty right? Good list.
But the ability to run to daylight, the ability to create a big play after you've broken a tackle, and certainly, again, that evasion rate speaks to the fact that this isn't just a big guy who, when he does get free, can create some big plays. It's somebody who has broken tackles, has forced missed tackles. Once you do that, if you then have long speed, that's the player that you want. You don't want the guy who has to break 15 tackles to gain an extra 3 yards, which is what you get with like a David Montgomery, Zach Moss type of profile. It's not to say those guys won't play at the NFL level or don't score fantasy points for you if you get them at the right price, but they're not the players who most of the time are going to go out and win seasons for you. Now, again, Benson has plenty of red flags. I'm not saying that he will either, but now that possibility, that specific path has been introduced as a possibility. You know, that gets me pretty fired up.
There was only 2 guys that ran faster than Trey Benson at the combine. One of them just 1/100 of a second ahead. That was Jalen Wright. And then you had Isaac Garendo.
Well, any type of back is fast. I think that we can easily undervalue just how important it is at the running back position. I love these fast guys here. And certainly with Jalen Wright and the overall workout that he had, where he was also fantastic in the explosion drills, you're looking at him as potentially being like an Alvin Kamara with straight line speed. And I mean, Kamara obviously was creating plenty of big plays at the NFL level, but he did not test well in the 40. He wasn't necessarily a straight line speed guy. When you think about Wright as Kamara and maybe quite a bit faster, then that, again, that really gets the juices flowing. So it's not this question of there is no upside in this draft. It's a question of, do these guys who have a shot, you know, are they going to hit their 90th percentile outcome, or they're say 99th and be a Kamara, or are they going to be sort of a rotational back who scores you points occasionally? I mean, this is a guy who came in and didn't do a lot through a couple of seasons, but then, I mean, this final year, 4 yards after contact, 29% evasion rate, 29 broken tackles. I mean, this is a player who has the peripherals and the athleticism, not just to be an interesting back, but to be a star at the NFL level. Now, again, you got to hit that real upside outcome to be that, but certainly teams are going to be interested in that. Fantasy managers should be as well. And then Garrido, somebody who I think dramatically changes what you're looking at in terms of some of the deep guys. He was somebody who really appealed to me as I was going through and writing up all of these players. He's actually the number two for Louisville, but he still goes for 1,000 scrimmage yards. He gets 49 fewer carries than Jordan, but he averages more yards after contact at 3.9. Better, although still not great, evasion rate at 19%. He was more effective as a receiver, averaged a half yard more per route. And then you go and look at what he does in this combine. And I think that when you originally start to investigate there, your assumption is just that this is a guy who is a smaller player. Colin, Garrido is 221 pounds. Right. And so when you're talking about a 4.33 40, talking about a 98th percentile explosion score on top of that, you're talking about a sub 7.3 cone. It really makes you wonder about, you know, where he was as a player at the college level, because someone with this athletic profile should simply be a star. And so you've got a lot of questions. And yet, depending on where he goes, and he's someone to track very closely with the buzz, because if the team that drafts him is excited about it right away, and you're starting to hear that he's putting pressure on the starters, that he's flashing all of these times in camp, then he'd be a guy where I think that that matters for, because you have to sort of answer this question of where was the production in college? Why is he the backup to a more pedestrian talent and has to transfer to Louisville from Wisconsin just to get even that? Right, so you're not going to ignore all of that, but you're also not going to ignore this combine performance where he just looks like a superstar.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? Go for a run, take a nap, hang out with friends, read a book. So many options. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The best way to squeeze some more into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make that a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. I began therapy in early 2023, and I found it has helped me set boundaries, learn positive coping skills, and add a lot to my day-to-day, and some of that being prioritization, to be able to focus on what is important at that time rather than trying to focus on everything that is going on in my life at that exact moment, which leads you to not be in the moment because you're thinking about stuff that is out of your control. And having that awareness has helped me throughout my day today. And that is something that I have found to be very positive for me. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/rotaviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/rotoviz.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, definitely for me, there's red flags, but there's always parts you never know in a person's development, you know, maturity and things like that. But that also becomes a red flag as well then, as to, you know, is that improved at this point? I'm just speculating that across all prospects, not this prospect. But, you know, when you have this amount of talent from an athletic standpoint, it feels like you should be automatically on the field if you're playing, and what you can do in the game is on par with your teammates. And that there's the part, obviously, that's harder to quantify now that you have the test results to go on as well. You don't want to be, you know, adding too much to it just purely based on that. Sean, you did mention, though, the depth, potentially. You said, I wrote down the word at the start. It was the sleepers are there. Who has got Sean Siegel excited?
Well, we just went through one of them. Also think that when you're looking at sort of a Marshawn Lloyd, because he was good but not great at the combine, is going to keep his price a little bit in check, which is certainly something that you're looking for when you view him also as a back who transferred and never really had the elite production where a team wanted to go through him. But when he did play, when he did touch the ball, he was extremely explosive, was able to generate both the yards after contact and the evasion rate types of things that we're looking for. We have Blair's player that he focuses on in the first episode of The Rookie Guide there in Jaden Sheridan, where his numbers at the FCS level were pretty crazy. His combine, more of a mixed bag, but I don't think takes him completely out of the conversation. Then you have a player like a Kamani Vidal, where this is a back who in 2022 and 2023 had over 3,000 combined yards from scrimmage, 25 total touchdowns, evaded 70 tackles, right, across those seasons. So the peripherals are there playing for Troy. The question is, you know, what is that going to mean when you're no longer at Troy? You're in the NFL, right? And so we look at his combine again as one where it doesn't immediately say to you, this guy is going to be an NFL starter. But when you're talking about a sub 4.5 at 213 pounds, when you're talking about an 83rd percentile vertical jump, that 37 and a half there, when you're talking about a guy at that size who does basically a 7 flat in the 3 cone, I mean, this is athleticism that plays at the NFL level. So then the question beyond that is, do the other things that he brings to the table, those peripherals, are those going to still be indicative of a guy who is good but not great? I think that you want to keep an eye on him, where he goes. I mean, some of these players that we get kind of excited about because they have some interesting parts of their profile and they have decent athleticism. Then you go through the draft and, you know, you think back to some of these recent seasons where Ben and I did the marathon recording sessions, and you get into round 5 and round 6 and round 7, and you're thinking, well, I've still got guys I wanted to know where they're going to go. Like, how long are we going to have to record to see them picked and then they go undrafted? But even then, a lot of those players have still come out and put up some numbers. I mean, you think about Keaton Mitchell, a guy we loved last season and couldn't understand why NFL teams would ignore a player who had crazy broken tackle and forced missed tackle numbers for a guy his size and runs in the 4.3s. You know, why wouldn't you want that? Well, the answer is that you should have. And unfortunately for him, you have that torn ACL late in the season. But I mean, he's a guy who's going to go on to be a star. We want to keep in mind all of these players now, but all again at the 4.46, that's a big difference from somewhere in the 4.3s. But the athleticism that he put on display at the combine again, I think we'll play. And so now we're kind of waiting on, you know, who's going to go out and grab these interesting players late in the draft. Colin, there are a couple other interesting names as well that we'll jump into in later shows. Because there's so much depth in this class at the receiver position, I don't think that you're going to get the type of inflation at running back that you might in some other classes, where even if guys are more sleepers or more long shot lottery ticket types than players you really are wanting to add into your roster in mid-second round prices, because of the dearth of top end running back talent and because, you know, people are always going to need some running backs, and the rookie draft is a great place to add some running backs. In a lot of seasons, I think these guys would be overdrafted simply because people need those players. I think you're going to get good prices on these guys this season. And you certainly, as you get into that third round, you think about some of the players who are available in the third round this past year in, you know, Chase Brown, and you had to be patient and you had to really wait. In shallower formats, you may have had to cut him before he started to flash. Brown is an interesting name right now because we don't know what the Cincinnati Bengals depth chart is going to look like this season. He could be somebody who pays off in a huge way. He could be somebody who, by the time we have the first kickoff, is more or less irrelevant. But there are players like that in this class who, again, are going to be inexpensive, and you want to keep an eye on which guys have the true upside to go on and do some things. And Colin, from the downside type of perspective, probably the player with the most interesting production coming into the combine is a Bucky Irving. He doesn't perform very well. To a certain extent, that was expected, and that was one of the things kind of holding his draft cost in check. Now that that's really confirmed at a level that a lot of people are going to be uncomfortable with, you would expect him to fall from where he is. And yet you want to remember that someone like a Kyren Williams was coming off of a final season where, even though the peripherals actually popped even more, that his overall production lagged, his tested athleticism not great, kind of falls off of the map, and a couple years later, because of that, ends up being the fantasy MVP. I'm certainly not saying that Irving is going to be that, but we want to still emphasize a lot of this production on the field. One of the comps that you heard from the commentators during the combine, which I did think, I mean, sometimes when you're talking about people who are looking at the NFL from a different perspective, you'll hear comps that don't really fit with your view of how prospect evaluation should go or your feeling about what the evidence-based outlook really is. But when you hear Devin Singletary in relation to him, I think there are a lot of strong comparisons there, because Singletary is somebody who had fantastic peripherals in college and huge numbers in college playing there at Florida Atlantic, and then has continued to put up really impressive peripherals at the NFL level. But also one of these guys, because he's small and he's not fast in a straight line, it means that the broken tackles, the forced missed tackles are probably not going to translate into eye-popping actual numbers. And yet Singletary has been a guy who's helped teams at the NFL level. Certainly he had the fantasy playoff run a couple years ago. He was very viable in stretches of the second half of the season last year for the Houston Texans. It may not be this guy who's going to come out and be a Kyren Williams. Maybe that's wildly optimistic to ever think that that back has, I mean, it's in the range of outcomes, but it's going to be one that is very, very unlikely. Devin Singletary, I think, is not hard to envision for him. And if you're in the right spot with the right team, and certainly if you're in a situation where you're in a committee and the other guy gets hurt, or you're in the committee and the other player just has a really tough stretch where they can't do anything, which is more or less what Damian Pierce had last year at times, then that player becomes a very viable fantasy option. You want to keep an eye on him and not completely write him off just because the athleticism numbers, you know, are frankly pretty depressing.
A lot of interesting stuff there, and I think the listeners will be digesting through that. I'm looking forward to continuing these conversations over the coming weeks and months as we head towards the NFL draft. And of course, if there's any players, prospects, or even if it's not draft-related topics or strategies you would like to see discussed here on RotoViz Overtime, don't hesitate to get in touch. We can't always use them, but we do try. Some of our, I think, best show topics come from the RotoViz Overtime community. So send them in at Overtime Ireland on Twitter, or you can email them across at rotovizradio@gmail.com. I mentioned at the start, the RotoViz Draft Guide is now available. Part one, which was the pre-combine edition, is available. You can get all three copies for $20. The link is in today's show notes. The second edition, which is the post-combine edition, will come out in the next week or so. So you'll get that once it is available. So check that out. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out all of Sean's work up on rotoviz.com. And until we are back, have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.